We've been taking a look at the judges, and in the book of Judges, the judges of Israel after the days of Brother Joshua, a span of time that is 450 years, as we're told in the scriptures, give or take. We'll be keeping track of that. Here at the beginning of Gideon's Gideon being called to be a judge of Israel, we're at that 213 year mark or so. So a few generations have come and gone since that time of Joshua. And we see how we've seen here in Judges that the Lord sends a prophet and to chide and rebuke Israel for her disobedience against him, and Gideon's call, his obedience. Remember, there's the Pentateuch only at hand there. They don't have the Bible, all of the Bible like we have, only five books of the Bible, which is enough, but we have much more revealed and opened up and to us than Brother Gideon did. He was a man that at first sought signs, and we saw about what the Lord says about looking after signs and that. We don't have to look after signs. We have the Word of God, and we need to know and follow and pray for the will of God to be known in our individual lives. We took a look last time and start off how it says here in Hebrews chapter 11, verse number 32, Brother Gideon's listed in that honor roll of faith. And I believe we begin to see, as we did last time, about how Gideon did move on. There's 32,000 men that have come together at his call to fight against the Midianites. And the Lord begins to work with Gideon and giving him instruction that he obeys without any doubt. And any obvious doubt or any rebuttal against what the Lord has said to do. We saw that 22,000 went home because of being fearful or just not wanting to be there. The force is reduced to 10,000. And then the Lord said, that's too many. Go ahead and have them go and drink. I'll tell you how to parse them out. 9,700 go home and 300 stay. The Lord gave great deliverance to Israel by Gideon and by the power of the Lord and him obeying, being willing to obey, and to the point that two princes of the Midianites were slain. And I had mentioned something to you about where we see Brother Gideon being from. It tells us in Judges 6, verse 11, that he's from Ophrah. And I had attributed that to be a part of the tribe of Ephraim, and I was incorrect in that. If you look at maps will, the boundaries, they put the boundaries for the tribes as best as they can. I gave you a map that showed that about where the tribes were because I wanted to see where he was calling them from. But understood in more recent study from the book of Joshua in chapter 18, verse 23, that Ophrah is a city of the Benjamites. It's a city of the Benjamites, and it spells out the land given to them and part of their borders. And so, although nothing tells us directly that Gideon is a Benjamite, it looks to be that he is, and he's from a city of the Benjamites. We closed out last time how Ephraim was upset when they got into the heat of dealing and chasing the Midianites and such as that. Joseph had called out Manasseh and Asher and Zebulun and Naphtali, and then when they had him on the run, he called out Naphtali and Asher and Manasseh, and then the brethren from Ephraim, the tribe of Ephraim, were upset because he called them late and told them to go down and get down to the land there around south of Jericho, and we're crossing the Jordan River and going over into that delta, that plain that is over in that area, same place that the children of Israel came into Canaan, same place that Brother Moses on the mount looked over, and the Lord showed him all of Canaan, and the same place where John the Baptist was baptizing, and the same place that Jesus went to, and to that same place that's referenced as John the Baptist baptizing there, and then came to Jericho and his triumphant entry and such. He told him to go down there and head him off at the pass, and these princes Oreb and Zeb were caught by the Ephraimites, and they were killed there and executed, and they held up the Midianites from being able to go back home. The Ephraimites, they were sore at Gideon And they said, well, you called us late. You didn't let us get in on the good stuff. And he said, what did we do more than you? You got the leaders. You got the two of these princes. And so they were appeased by that. In Judges chapter 8, we continue on this afternoon. And verse number 4, it says, and Gideon came to Jordan and passed over, he and 300 men that were with him, faint yet pursuing them. And so there they've had them on the run and they've been defeating them. And indeed, this is the Lord's work and blessing that the Midianites fought against each other. He gave the 300 men great strength and great ability to fight, where it's come true what the Lord said, that one would set to flight 100 and two would set to flight 1,000. That's what's going on here, is the Lord has blessed them in that great way in his promises. And so they pass over Jordan, the 300 men. They're faint, they're tired, but they're still pursuing. And he said unto the men of Succoth, give, I pray you, loaves of bread unto the people that follow me, for they be faint. They need some food. And I am pursuing after Zeba and Zalmunna, kings of Midian. So if you have your map, and let's see, which map do you need to have? You need to have Brother Doug's map. Well, you can have either map, okay? So here's Brother Doug's map, and here's the map that I gave you recently. The one that I gave you has the boundaries of the tribes spelled out. Look there on the map, north of the Dead Sea, probably not quite halfway, going towards the Sea of Galilee. Over on the east side, you see there the town of Succoth. Okay, and down here around Jericho, and you see there at the northern end of the Dead Sea is that plain that I was talking about. That's where Gideon called unto Ephraim, who was over here in that area north of Jerusalem, and he said, you guys get over there and you cut them off at the pass. And that's where they did to prevent them from going on south back to Midian, because the land of Midian is essentially due south and a little bit to the east of the Dead Sea, and that line that the Jordan River and the Dead Sea would be if you shoot it on down south towards the Red Sea and that other gulf that is over there to the east. And so, see there at Succoth, that's where he's at now. So he's crossed up north. He's been pursuing up north, now to the east side of the Jordan River. And he says to these folks at Succoth, he says, give the fellows that are running and fighting with me, give us something to eat. And they say this, and the princes of Succoth, verse 6, said, are the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna now in thine hand, that we should give bread unto thine army? And said, well, you're pursuing. And no doubt they looked at the count of the men. Okay, I think that that's when they saw the army that came with Gideon, and then they knew the force, the size of the force of the Midianites. And, of course, remember that by the Midianites, Israel had been impoverished. And so they know about that. And so the people there in Succoth said, you're talking like somebody that's already got them in hand. You don't even have them in hand. Are we going to help you? He said that we should give bread into thine army. Are they in your hand now? And Gideon said, here's what he promises them. Therefore, when the Lord hath delivered Zeba and Zalmunna into mine hand, then I will tear your flesh with the thorns of the wilderness and with briars. Or in the more notable, or the more, the closer vernacular to you and me, he says, I'm going to come back and handle you. that's what he said. I'm going to chastise you with the thorns and the briars of the wilderness. I'm going to handle you when this work is done. Here we see the faith of Gideon. He's been told of the Lord, I'm going to deliver Midian into your hand. You're going to deliver Israel. And he is in pursuit, even though he is greatly, greatly outnumbered. Remember, the number of the Midianites to start with was more than could be numbered. And so then it goes on, and he went up thence to Penuel. And so we say, we would think going up would be north, but there is a reference to Jerusalem, although Jerusalem is not the capital yet, so we would just take this to be attributed to going north. And he went up to Penuel. Now, Penuel will not be on your map, but those historians and scholars say that it was a near city of Succoth. And spake unto them likewise. And the men of Penuel answered him as the men of Succoth had answered him, said, have you got them in your hands yet? See, they were afraid if we help Gideon and he's unsuccessful, then the Midianites are going to chastise us. They didn't have the faith that Brother Gideon had in his defeat of the Midianites. And so the people of Penuel, the leaders of Penuel, said the same thing. And he spake unto the men of Penuel, saying, when I come again in peace, I will break down this tower. And so there was a tower there at this city. He said, when this is all done, I'm coming back, and you're going to know that you should have helped us. Now, Zeba and Zalmunna were in Karkor, and that's another city, not on the map, but we understand and are told that it is on the east side of the Jordan, maybe going south, because that would be the natural direction that Midian would go in fleeing to try to get back home, and their host with them, about 15,000 men. All that were left of the host of the children of the east, for there fell 120,000 that drew the sword. So the number of the army, from the numbers given to us, was some 135,000 strong. Taken on by 300? Yeah, not just 300, but 300 in the Lord. And when anybody is with the Lord, it's always a majority, isn't it? See, obeying the Lord and following the Lord always puts us in the majority. And so here we see of this 135,000 strong army that the Lord caused to fall upon themselves and then caused them to fall at the hand of Gideon and his 300 men, and then all the tribes of Israel that came together, and then those of Ephraim that cut them off down south there at the pass, so to speak, down there in the delta north of Moab, on the east of the Jordan River, and that escape route, and Oreb and Zeb being slain there, two princes of the Midianites. There's 15,000 left, and these fellows, these leaders of these two cities of Succoth and Penuel, they said, 300 against what's left, and that just isn't going to work. Okay, so here we have these other two princes, Zeba and Zalmunna. And verse number 11. And Gideon went up by the way of them that dwelt in the tents of the east of Noba and Jogbeha, and smote the host, for the host was secure. They had fortified. And if you count this, the odds are incredible, 450-1 with Gideon and his 300. And when Zeba and Zalmunna fled, he pursued after them and took the two kings of Midian, Zeba and Zalmunna, and discomfited all the host. And Gideon, the son of Joash, returned from battle before the sun was up. It was a quick battle, wasn't it? It was a great and quick deliverance that the Lord blessed with there. And as he went, he caught a young man of the men of Succoth. He didn't forget. He didn't forget what he promised those up north there, and inquired of him, and he described unto him the princes of Succoth and the elders thereof, even 77 men. So 77 men, right? 70 would be 60 and 17. 77 leaders, and he came unto the men of Succoth and said, behold, Zeba and Zalmunna, with whom you did upbraid me. Evidently, he loaded them up and took them with him. And so here's what I told you what our purpose was, and here they are. Saying, are the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna now in thine hand, that we should give bread unto thy men that are weary? And he took the elders of the city and the thorns of the wilderness and briars, and with them he taught the men of Succoth. He handled them. He handled them and taught them that lesson. They should have believed the working of the Lord and the calling of Gideon. And he beat down the tower of Penuel. He had promised that, hadn't he? He beat down the tower of Penuel and slew the men of the city. Now, Brother Gideon was called to this service and called to this judgeship by the Lord. Understand that the roughness of this and the bloodiness of this is a result of the sin of the children of Israel. And him being judge, it is the thing that he is to do to lead the people and to persuade the naysayers and to make a statement about what the Lord said. The Lord's delivering Israel by his hand. Aren't you glad that we're not called to such a thing? And so he made good on the two promises that he made to the leaders of Succoth and Penuel. Verse 18. Then said he to Zeba and Zalmunna, "What manner of men were they whom ye slew at Tabor?" And this, we believe and understand that this is a reference to Mount Tabor. And to see where that is, you'll have to look on the map that I gave you last time, one that defines the different tribes. Mount Tabor is up north there in Issachar, okay? And so we begin to have, at least in my mind, we begin to have a geography dilemma here. Why is he asking about these? And then why, what is it that he says? And then this reference to Mount Tabor. And so let's read on here. What is said. He said to Zeba and Zalmunna, these two princes of the Midianites, "What manner of men were they whom ye slew at Tabor, at Mount Tabor?" And they answered, "As thou art, so were they. Each one resembled the children of a king." And he said, Gibeon said, "They were my brethren, even the sons of my mother." So now, if indeed Brother Gideon is from Benjamin, which is way on down south. If you take a look there, the tribe of Benjamin, and on the map that I've given you that delineates the different the regions of the tribes, Ophrah is just a little bit there northeast of Bethel. Okay, Bethel is one of the cities of the Benjamites, and so if that's where he's from, and then he asks about these. Were that Zeba and Zalmunna put to death, and then he claims that they were the sons of his mother, okay, his brethren. How do we come up with this? How does that distance make sense? Well, it could be possibility. Just this would be the case. As Midian came into the land or was in the land, terrorizing and dealing with Israel and impoverishing Israel as they were, that they took them captive. And as they marauded around and plagued the land as they did and the people of the land, they took them up to that region of Issachar. And once they were beginning to be pressed by the fighting and the calling of the different tribes, remember, the tribes that Brother Gideon called were Manasseh and Asher and Zebulun. And so there, it would make sense if this host of the Midianites had pushed north, and that was the area of the battle, and that Brother Gideon would call the nearest of the tribes to come to war against them, then they would have at that point begin to kill those that they had taken prisoner, possibly. And it was known in the fighting, in the aftermath, that they were there dead. And so Gideon had known this. "What manner of man were they whom ye slew at Tabor?" Said, what did they look like? And they said, "They answered, as you are, so were they. Each one resembled the children of a king." Something about the care of them, something about the look or the fairness of them, we just don't know. And he said, "They were my brethren, even the sons of my mother." And so that would certainly cause him to be angry and wrathful. "As the Lord liveth, if ye had saved them alive," which evidently there was opportunity for them to do so, "I would not slay you." And he said unto Jether, his firstborn, Gideon did, "Up and slay them." But the youth drew not his sword, for he feared, because he was yet a youth. Then Zeba and Zalmunna said, "Rise thou, you do it, Gideon, and fall upon us, for as the man is, so is his strength. And Gideon arose and slew Zeba and Zalmunna and took away the ornaments that were on their camels' necks. Very decorative, very valuable, very ornate, and it would be a trophy, if you will, for his conquering. You know, the Lord's blessed greatly, hadn't he? The Lord has done what he has said he would do. He would deliver. He used this man in a force so small that we, as a man, as men and women, we marvel that the Lord, that it could be done. But with the power of the Lord, all things are possible, aren't they? And it's who could have overcome such a great force as the Midianites? Remember how it said about their camels and all that they brought? That's implied with that. Everything that they had set up there and the impoverishment of the land for what 7 years that they had done. Who could overcome such a thing? Well, the Lord did. And the Lord used this man to do it. And he used a small force to do it, because the power of the Lord is without measure. You know, it'd be good now to just go home and enjoy the blessing of the Lord and get back to serving the Lord, wouldn't it? And that's what should be done. But the thing is, this happens, and this is told unto us, and we need to beware, even for ourselves, about how we value the things and how what esteem we put on the things of life and on the world, to hold them in the right place, using them yet not abusing them. In verse 22, then the men of Israel said unto Gideon, rule thou over us, both thou and thy son's son also, for thou hast delivered us from the hand of Midian. We want you to be our king, in a sense. We want you to rule over us. And understand, the work of a judge is not to be a king. The judges are called such because they are the leader. They are the one that is getting information from the Lord about what to do and what the purpose of the Lord is in the nation. But they're not to be revered from the standpoint as a king would be, and for there to be a dynasty set up and such as that. Listen to the words of Gideon. And Gideon said unto them, I will not rule over you, neither shall my son rule over you. The Lord shall rule over you. You know, he takes them and he points them back to the way it's supposed to be. The way it was supposed to be from the time that they arrived in Canaan. That the nation was to have a relationship with God. The Word of God is there in the first five books. The tabernacle is there in Shiloh for the place and the service and the order of worship. They have the priesthood that is there to offer the sacrifices. And they have been blessed. They have been blessed as they are obedient to the Lord and follow the Lord. They have a bounty that can be unimagined. That's the way it's supposed to be. But you know what happens with people? You know what happens with mankind? It's sad about us. It's just the way that it is. We are easily bored. We get bored easy. And we need to, rather than getting bored, we need to be thankful. We need to enjoy the blessings that we have, not get bored. We get on our children about being bored. Most of us have stories that we tell and accounts that we tell about when we first told our parents, I'm bored. Oh, man, that cost you, huh? You know, we don't need to be bored. We don't need to want something that we don't have. We need to enjoy what the Lord has given us. And that's what Israel needed to do. But one aspect of it is they got bored. They got discontent. You know, the sameness of a good and a blessed life by the Lord. Our culture teaches us that's no good. The sameness of a calm life, of a steady life, of a blessed life. The culture says, be excited all the time. Be entertained all the time. Do, do, do all the time. And the Lord says, be still and know that I'm God. And it's not wrong for us to enjoy what he's given to us. But there is a sameness about the blessing of the Lord that we just need to continue to be thankful and enjoy what he gives us. Not be bored. There's a trap that many we can fall into, that we can be bored about a blessed life. He says, the Lord shall rule over you. And they made it evident here that they wanted more than that. And that's the beginning of a spirit that's at hand in Israel for them ultimately to desire a king. And Gideon said unto them, this is a sad thing, I would desire a request of you, that you would give me every man the earrings of his prey. For they had gotten earrings because they were Ishmaelites, the Midianites, descendants of Ishmael, and they wore earrings. And that's a practice of the heathen. And they answered, we will willingly give them. And they spread a garment and did cast therein every man the earrings of his prey. And so all the men that had been killed, they took their earrings and that, and they gathered them up, and Gideon wanted them. And so they spread out a garment there, and they just started pouring the earrings on there of the Ishmaelites, the men that they had defeated. And they answered, we will willingly give them. And they spread a garment and did cast therein every man the earrings of his prey. And the weight of the golden earrings that he requested was 1,700 shekels of gold. A lot of gold. Besides ornaments and collars and purple raiment that was on the kings of Midian. And beside the chains that were about their camels' necks. All this ornament, all this gold, and all these metals and ornaments and stuff that they collected, they willingly gave those over to Gideon. Now that right there, him asking for that, maybe there is no problem, no issue. They were thankful for Gideon's work. They were thankful for the Lord using him to deliver. But then here, Gideon wanted a testimony rather than a memory of the Lord's deliverance and such. And Gideon made, verse 27, an ephod thereof. What do you think about making an ephod? You know, over at Shiloh, there's an ephod. Had he looked and considered about the ephod that was worn by the high priest, 12 jewels that are upon it there, representing the 12 tribes of Israel? Had he looked upon that and thought, man, that's really, really nice. I'd like to have something like that. I don't know if he did or not. There's no knowing that. But from that gold, he made an ephod. Did he wear it himself? It doesn't seem so. He very well may have tried it out. It may have been fitted to him. And Gideon made an ephod thereof of the gold and put it in his city, even in Ophrah, there in Benjamin, northern Benjamin. And all Israel went thither a whoring after it. It became a point of worship. It became a place of dedication and remembrance of the Lord's deliverance. And they looked to admire this ephod rather than what they had from the Lord. Which thing became a snare unto Gideon and to his house, as we will see in the future. And so it's a sad thing. It's a sad thing that just in this one little thing, it became such a problem. It became just in this one thing, it became such a snare to Israel and to Gideon and to his household. And you know, we would ask ourselves why. But the thing is a lot of things that we do that we should ask why about too. Verse 28, thus was Midian subdued before the children of Israel, so that they lifted up their heads no more. So they are finally defeated. And the country was in quietness 40 years in the days of Gideon. So now, a 40-year blessing and reprieve, deliverance from the oppressors of Israel by the Lord, by the hand of his man, Gideon. And then we read this, and this is sad too. And Zerubbabel, which was the name that was given to him by his father, all the way back at the beginning when we saw him take a stand for the Lord, break down the altar to Baal of his father and the cutting down of the grove and the sacrificing of the oxen that his father had there unto the Lord. And Zerubbabel, the son of Joash, went and dwelt in his own house back down in Ophrah. And Gideon was had 70 sons, 40 or 60 would be 60, and 10 sons of his body begotten. So he had 70 sons. For he had many wives. And his concubine that was in Shechem, she also bare him a son whose name is called Abimelech. And that's there for a reason, because we're going to hear more about him. And Gideon the son of Joash died in a good old age and was buried in the sepulcher of Joash's father in Ophrah, and of the Abiezerites. And it came to pass, as soon as Gideon was dead, that the children of Israel turned again, just like we saw there in the beginning of the book of Judges. While the judges lived, Israel obeyed and served the Lord. And what's it say there? When the judge died, then Israel went a-whoring back after the gods of the land. And it came to pass, as soon as Gideon was dead, that the children of Israel turned again and went a-whoring after Balaam and made Baal Perith their god. And the children of Israel remembered not the Lord their God, who had delivered them out of the hands of all their enemies on every side. Neither showed they kindness to the house of Zerubbabel, namely Gideon, according to all the goodness which he had showed unto Israel. He ventured his life at the command of the Lord. He was obedient to the Lord. He caused Israel to obey the Lord and toe the line. He had this ephod and ophrah, and you know, everybody that wanted would it be that everybody that would come to Shiloh would want to make a round over by there to see the ephod? Just wasn't satisfied with what the Lord had in Shiloh. You know, that of the tabernacle, from the outside, the tabernacle was very, it really wasn't much to look at. But I tell you what was on the inside was wondrous. And granted, not everybody could see it. But then the man dies, and Israel goes right back to her old ways, bringing up another Baal-related god, another god of the land. A new god. Isn't that something how it is with false gods and those that are would be pagan and worshiping of images and of gods as such? Every land, every people have a different one. Every city has a different one. There's no, they claim that this one's the greatest and they claim that this one's the greatest and this claims, and that right there tells you that there's no greatness in it. Because nobody can agree. Men can't agree on who's the greatest. Because it's all a figment of their imagination. Gideon. Brother Gideon. We're going to see about this Abimelech. Gideon was blessed with a lot of sons and a posterity there that should have been far-reaching. But the son of his concubine, he was a problem. And we're going to see about that, Lord willing, next time.